From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, we look at the chance that the state Senate could be dominated by Democrats after next week's election. We take you to a debate for an assembly seat covering Washington and Saratoga counties. And the AIM pipeline project gets the green light to start operations. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. There's a greater chance than ever that the state's Senate could be dominated by Democrats after the November 8th election. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, many issues stalled in the Republican-led New York State Senate for years would now have a possibility of passing.
Campaign finance reform, the DREAM Act, which offers college tuition support to the children of undocumented immigrants, and more money for underperforming schools are just a few of the topics that might be approved under a Senate controlled by Democrats. Governor Cuomo is betting on that happening. He's been more active this election cycle in bolstering Democratic candidates. He spoke at a rally for incumbent Senator George Latimer in Westchester on October 30th.
Pleasure to be with all of my colleagues.
He says at the top of his agenda will be ethics changes to respond to a string of corruption scandals. They have so far been resisted by the Republicans who lead the Senate.
We have one more big piece that we have to do, and that is ethics reform in Albany.
The governor most recently has been pushing for limits to lawmakers' outside income. Both former leaders of the legislature are facing jail time for illegally monetizing their positions as legislators for personal gain. Groups that have long supported ethics reform say Senate Democrats would likely be better on the issue. Jessica Wisniewski is with the group Citizen Action, which is pushing for campaign finance reforms. They include closing a loophole that allows donors to form limited liability companies and bypass rules that set caps on donations to candidates.
There's never a guarantee that you can get anything in Albany, but the likelihood that things will move forward on campaign finance reform is much greater under the Democrats because many of them have sponsored bills, they've showed their support.
Cuomo has said in the past that he backs public financing of campaigns, but he has not pushed it as actively as he has for some other issues, like raising the minimum wage. Wisniewski, whose group supports public campaign financing, says with Democrats in charge of the Senate, it's more likely that they will respond to what she says is increasing voter demands to get big money out of politics. She says the popularity of the presidential campaign of Bernie Sanders, who said his average campaign donation was just $27, is evidence of that.
The public at large is very ready for a deep change of course where they get to be in charge of their elections again. And their small donations matter, not the big-time corporate donations.
Wisniewski says long-stalled criminal justice reforms could also move under a Democratic Senate. She says New York is one of the only states to still sentence 16- and 17-year-olds convicted of felonies to adult prisons.
We are one of two states with North Carolina that has these incredibly outdated laws that put children in adult prison. And so the age has bipartisan support from like DAs, local law enforcement, but it's been blocked for years by Senate Republicans.
Governor Cuomo, while pushing progressive social issues, has also been a fiscal conservative during his tenure in office, and he's relied on Republicans in the Senate to back a property tax cap and a voluntary limit on state spending growth to 2% per year. Democrats, though, traditionally have a reputation of being more open to raising taxes and increasing spending than do Republicans. Cuomo's been warning gatherings of Democratic candidates and their supporters that they, too, should be careful about spending increases or raising taxes. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week it's all about next week, and that has to do with the presidential election. Two New Yorkers at the top, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And I guess the real question is, in New York, how that will play down ballot.
That is the question. As always, perceptive, David. The real issue is how many people will show up, and whether people who are Democrats, and we know more Democrats vote in presidential years than any other, whether the Democrats show up, have no idea who their state senator is or anybody else is, and take a look and say, what are all these other things? Well, I'm a Democrat. I'm going to vote for all the Democrats here. Now, in past presidential elections, that's been very helpful to the Democrats. Of course, upstate New York is a different place than the five boroughs in New York. And there we are going to see the ramifications of having allowed the state Senate to draw their own districts, one of the great disgraces in our so-called democracy, because we allow these people to draw districts where they can win. Now, whether they have drawn districts that are tight enough so that Democrats who are turning out, there aren't enough votes to do it, that'll be the issue. Whether or not their gerrymandering is so strong that it doesn't matter how many people get to vote. But it's going to be a close election. The governor, looking over his shoulder at the left, who damn near defeated him when Zephyr Teachout ran with no money and nothing else because she was from the Democratic left and he was a fiscal conservative, when he almost beat her. And so he's known all along now that he has a problem on his left. So he has gone out and he has worked for a couple of the Democrats who are running for the state Senate, not for everybody, and for darned few incumbents, I think, against one Republican incumbent. I believe that's correct. So if the state Senate turns, a lot of things are going to turn in New York State. That is for sure. Then comes the question as to whether the so-called traitorous five or six, the Independent Democratic Conference, whether or not they are willing to go back and caucus with the Democrats, or whether they've all gotten good things out of playing games with the Republicans, whether they'll conference with the Republicans. It's going to be close, and a lot's going to depend on what Andrew Cuomo himself under the gun, because of all these things that are happening to him. Not all of his colleagues, but his most important colleagues are on trial, basically for their lives. They could be in jail for a long, long time. And his name has been dragged across the boards in the Bridgegate scandal also. At this stage of the game, I see a new quieter Andrew Cuomo emerging. And frankly, I think it's been good for him, as opposed to, you know, some of the stuff that he was doing. Now, does he still thought to really detest de Blasio? Yeah, and there are some signs that he's still up to his old tricks. Tom DiNapoli, the wonderful controller in New York, who just doesn't deserve it, he's given him a hard time also. But he's a quieter guy than he was, and I think, as they say about Donald Trump, he's sticking closer to the script.
How about the fact that we learned from Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief of the New York Daily News, that the governor actually sent a questionnaire to would-be candidates?
Well, it's just unbelievable. None of us could quite get it. So he writes to Democratic candidates. Those are people in his own party saying, are you for this, 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 and this? Maybe looking hard for any reason to disqualify any of them, because we all know, and it's an open secret in Albany, that he has been for the keeping the Republicans in control of the Senate. When he ran, I just want to remind everybody about this. When he ran, his number one issue, number one, was he's not going to sign a reapportionment bill that allows the Senate Republicans to draw their own districts. Well, he signed it. Proof positive that he was for them. So as far as I'm concerned, anyway. So there you are. It's a tangled web, to use the Shakespearean reference. Am I convinced that the governor really wants a Democratic Senate? No, I am not.
You referenced Zephyr Teachout, the 19th congressional district. I saw at least one article said that this could be the most important race in the country. She faces Republican John Faso. A recent poll this week, in fact, showed her a couple of points ahead, but that's within the margin of error. And the ads are on virtually every other second.
That's right, because it's a fair fight district. You don't see that many of them. They're up there. They are getting tons of help from the Republicans and the party for Faso, the Democrats for Teachout, and they are pouring immense amounts of money into these advertisements that you see constantly on the television in the upstate communities around the 19th Congressional District. I would think, frankly, that under normal circumstances, this would be Faso's to lose. Because after all, Chris Gibson kept winning. Faso says, I'm a Chris Gibson type of Republican. And I would have thought that Faso could pull it out. He's yelling that she's a carpetbagger. She's yelling that he's a rabid Republican. And it, I believe, would have played out that Faso might have won. But this is a Democratic year. And this is a year that Hillary is going to be bringing out a lot of Democrats. And so you never know. She's ahead by a scant couple of points, but that doesn't really mean anything. It's all about turnout.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Two candidates vying for the New York State Assembly seat that covers portions of Washington and Saratoga counties met this week for a debate. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there.
Assemblywoman Carrie Warner, a first-term Democrat, and Republican challenger Chris Boyark attempted to make the case for how they'd reach across the aisle. In her opening remarks, Warner, who grabbed the 113th district seat after the retirement of Republican Tony Jordan, said bipartisanship has been a hallmark of her 2 years in Albany.
On each of the 18 pieces of legislation that I passed through the Assembly, I have co-sponsors from both parties, and I am meticulous about having Republican support in the Senate.
Boyark, a restaurant owner and former Marine, said his experience shows a record of working with people from different backgrounds.
I do believe that it's important for us to have a voice and an advocate for our beliefs in this district, and I believe strongly that I can effectively be that voice. I grew up in this area. I'm from this area. I attended middle school here in this very building.
The candidates were first questioned about single-payer health care. Boyark said he did not support a single-payer model. Warner said she voted twice against single-payer bills that she claimed were not viable. The candidates also spoke in favor of reprivatizing the New York Racing Association, which has been under state control for the past several years, and is an important issue in Saratoga Springs. The candidates clashed when asked about ethics reforms. Warner discussed reforms from the Democratic majority she supported.
I helped to pass the pension forfeiture bill. I helped to pass the closing the LLC loophole. I have sponsored term limits bills. I passed a package of 32 rules reforms that make the assembly more transparent and accountable.
Boyark asked Warner why she did not support ethics reform bills introduced by her Republican colleagues.
Simple things as requiring a two-thirds majority for messages of necessity, which the governor seems to love, going into session after midnight, 8-year term limits for committee chairs, term limits for leaders. If we support term limits, I would have expected that you would have voted in favor of those things and not against them.
Warner countered, saying the provisions mentioned by Boyark are what's referred to as hostile amendments and that she would not support them.
They're offered directly onto the floor, and they don't go through the full legislative process. They don't go through the committees. Oftentimes, they are not even the sponsor of those bills don't even ask the committee chair to put them through the committee.
Boyark argued that the committee process was closed to the public. Warner said the public may attend the meetings and that she has supported legislation that would outfit committee chambers with video streaming equipment. The 113th district is home to new high-tech companies, including the massive GlobalFoundries plant in Malta, but many former mill towns are struggling to get by. When asked about what they would do to support new business, Boyark said taxes and overregulation are killing the business climate.
And we have to lay a solid foundation for small business to be able to thrive and develop. And that's going to help these economies. This is going to help these towns grow. They're not going to have these big corporations coming in anymore.
Warner said while taxes will always play a factor in where businesses locate, she said it's an energy deficit that is keeping companies away from upstate New York.
We do not have sufficient power or natural gas to fuel the growth of those kinds of businesses. And it will clearly put a brake on our ability to add jobs to both our traditional economy and to our new economy jobs.
To increase commerce on the Hudson River, Boyark said investments in infrastructure and creating a more business-friendly climate would encourage more companies to use the river for shipping. Warner spoke in favor of navigational dredging on the Champlain Canal to restore the waterway, which is now restricted to only certain kinds of traffic.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
The company behind the AIM pipeline project has been given the green light to start operations. There are a few exceptions, mainly a new portion under the Hudson River. We get the latest from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission recently issued partial authorization for Spectra Energy to operate its Algonquin Incremental Market, or AIM, project, with the exception of the portion under the Hudson River, along with two meter and regulating stations, one in Windham County, Connecticut, and another in Suffolk County, Massachusetts. Algonquin had requested such authorization with those exceptions. Courtney Williams is a Peekskill resident.
As a homeowner who lives 400 feet from the pipeline, I received no notification on whether they're turning on the gas or not. And then a parent whose daughter goes to a school 400 feet from the pipeline, I have not, as far as I know, the school has not been notified of their plans to turn on the gas either.
Williams is also vice president of Safe Energy Rights Group and is calling on New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and other elected officials to step in and halt the project.
It is most definitely the 11th hour for our elected officials, and it's time that they stepped up and did whatever it takes to stop this project.
A Spectra spokeswoman says FERC approved Algonquin's request to provide up to 245,000 decatherms per day. The total AIM project capacity is 342,000 decatherms per day. She says Algonquin will use its existing crossings of the Hudson River for the service until the new construction is complete and authorized by FERC. John Parker is director of legal programs for Westchester County-based Riverkeeper and speaks to Spectra's change of plans for the pipeline portion in the river, noting the existing pipeline is smaller than the pipeline into which it hooks into on land.
The entire question of horizontal directional drilling was one of the ways that this company proposed to minimize or decrease impacts to the Hudson River. And now that that has run afoul of their plans and they've kind of drop the ball on it, I think questions are open again. So I would anticipate that the administration would take a look at this and be very strict and rigorous with respect to Clean Water Act water quality certification and the Clean Air Act information I just mentioned.
A State Department of Environmental Conservation spokesman released a statement that says in part, quote, "The state has been clear and has repeatedly called upon FERC to halt the construction of this pipeline until an independent safety analysis can be completed," end quote. He says that at the governor's February direction, the state has hired an independent consultant to conduct a risk assessment review. Again, Parker.
There's concern about whether or not this contingency really was researched, evaluated, and determined to be safe and effective. And in a rush to get a pipeline online, that's not really the situation we want to see. So this question of whether or not the permits that were granted allowed this from the state anyway, to happen in terms of the amount of compression of the gas is one of the questions being raised. And that would do a direct impact to the Clean Air Act permits that were issued.
Much of Houston-based Spectra's AIM pipeline is replacing 26-diameter pipeline with 42-inch diameter pipeline. The project starts in Rockland County and moves through Westchester and Putnam counties before heading into Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. On October 27th, hundreds of pipeline opponents rallied outside eight of U.S. Senator Charles Schumer's offices, including in Peekskill. Opponents say 15 people were arrested after refusing to leave until Schumer took action. Again, Williams.
You know, Senator Schumer has had press conferences on everything from dish detergent pods to powdered caffeine, but he's never held a press conference on this pipeline next to Indian Point.
The AIM pipeline runs through a portion of the Buchanan-based Indian Point nuclear power plant property. A Schumer spokesman in a statement says, quote, "Senator Schumer has repeatedly and clearly expressed his opposition to the Algonquin gas pipeline because it poses a serious threat to the health and safety of residents and our environment across the Hudson Valley and New York State," end quote. And while opponents note Schumer has spoken to the project's risk, they're hopeful he'll take further action. In August, Schumer and fellow Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand asked FERC to suspend pipeline construction in light of continued public opposition. The senators requested that FERC commission an independent review of the potential health, safety, and environmental impacts.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York's 10 regional economic development councils are presenting their 2016 proposals to the Strategic Implementation Assessment Team this week. It's the first part of the process that will lead to $750 million in development grants being awarded across the state. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
This is the sixth round of the Regional Economic Development Council competitive grant process. Five top performers will receive up to $25 million in Empire State Development Capital Grant funding. The remaining five regions will get up to $10 million. In addition, each area is eligible to receive $15 million in tax credits to attract and enhance businesses. Each regional council has 30 minutes to give an overview of their grant request, followed by questions from the panel. The North Country Regional Economic Development Council opened with a video to introduce their theme, community. It's something that co-chair Gary Douglas says has been woven through all their presentations.
Our vision is still working about communities, about aerospace, transit equipment, defense, biotech, energy, and manufacturing sectors that we're looking to develop across the region, leveraging our gateway to Canada, investing in community development in ways that expands opportunities, activating tourism by investments in destination development, particularly in communities in the Thousand Islands and Adirondacks, investment in agriculture, particularly value added, and creation of the greenest energy economy in the state. Those remain the signature themes of all of our strategies.
Since the REDC grants began in 2011, the North Country has funded 402 projects totaling $423.1 million. North Country Regional Economic Development Council co-chair and Clarkson University president Tony Collins says they have been successful across the vast region because they target community by community, rather than focusing on one large project.
When you think of the 30 priority projects that we're suggesting in our round, you'll see the geographic coverage. You'll see that all of these are connected to our strategic themes and also connected to the development of our communities. It's cohesive, we're spreading the wealth, and it's driving our economy.
The panel included an update on the Governor's Downtown Revitalization Initiative grant that was presented to Plattsburgh earlier this year. Mayor James Calnon noted that a community profile has been completed, along with strategies and goals.
Our community engagement hits high gear starting this week, and we, of course, are doing all of these things based on the plan that's already in place with the Regional Economic Development Council. We recognize that downtown Plattsburgh is a huge part of the overall industrial cluster in there, and while we are a regional economic center, we have a limited downtown workforce, and so we really need to focus our attention on getting more housing downtown, getting more small businesses downtown, and that will really define what we end up with in the coming year.
Tony Collins noted that as Plattsburgh takes advantage of the revitalization funds, downtowns across the region are seeking similar opportunities.
If we can get Plattsburgh to be revitalized, we think we've got the model of going through rural areas. We're doing that in small ways. Saranac Lake, the revitalization of the Trudeau Institute, Lake Placid in Wilmington, Lowellville, Lewis County, the first business park in that county, Ogdensburg, a major upgrade to their airport, a long list of them.
The Mid-Hudson and Mohawk Valley were among the five regional economic development councils that presented their plans on Tuesday. The remaining five scheduled to present on Wednesday included Central New York and the Capital Region. A link to the web stream of the presentations is available at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1645, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers. representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.